treasure is also present in our meeting. You are welcome in our meeting, and maybe there will be questions even to you. I know that you are observers. You were telling me that you are observers, but you see, when you are in this room, there's no observers. Will be built. The first four was Kimberly, Nigel, Klerksdorp, and Leeuwkop. Then the president announced again that four new others, additional, will be built. And that will be in KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, Western Cape, and the Eastern Cape. Now, the reason why we are here today is to really find out from the department how far are we. We know that there's only one prison that the department is busy building now in Kimberley. But you see, according to this book, construction on the first set of four new prisons, which were said to be completed by 2007-2008, has not yet begun. And there is uncertainty with regard to how these four prisons will be constructed and managed. Until this matter has been effectively resolved, it seems imprudent to embark on a totally new process with regard to the construction of an additional four prisons. In addition, the 2006-2007 budget allocated does not include allocations for the second set of prisons. Commissioner, it is a very worrying issue that we are still sitting with this thing. You know, for us as this committee, this is our last year as a committee together. Next year is election. And at least we want to tell the voters out there that no, we as a portfolio committee have really fulfilled our mandate in doing what the voters have sent us here. But now we are sitting with one prison. And you know, the implication of this, the president is announcing a prison and the prisons are not being constructed. Only one in Kimberley. Now, I hope that your presentation will give us better answers to this thing. You know, I'm sitting with ministers here of our meeting where we discuss this building of prisons. And really, I hope today we must finalize this thing. If we can't finalize it, we are not going to wipe it from our agenda, even if we had weekly meetings on this thing. But we must finalize this thing. Commissioner, let me welcome you to brief the committee on this issue of the building of prisons. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, members of the Portfolio Committee. Good morning. It's good to see you again and give us an opportunity to put certain things into perspective as usual. But this time, one of the Honorable Members commented on the size of the delegation and expressing concern that it is much bigger than the members of the Portfolio Committee. Chairperson, just to explain, indeed, we are taking quite serious the challenges as you have articulated and our responsibility to really communicate where we are with the program of building new facilities. And for that reason, given the nature of infrastructural programs, there are three critical players, DCS being the lead because we are the department that requires these facilities. Public Works, given their central role when it comes to infrastructural development, and therefore I have here with me Mr. Malebe, who is the Deputy Director General in Public Works, responsible for operating. He is sitting over there. Next to him is Ms. Leboko. She says a name with Mr. Motseki, Ms. Piri. She's the Director Special Projects in the Department of not only Special Projects but Major Special Projects in the Department of Public Works. When we were with the committee last year, I think my memory serves me right, it's on the 2nd of May, dealing with the progress with regard to this same matter, we also had Mr. Taz Chaponda. He is here with us again. He's the key government person, the Deputy Director General in Fesley, responsible for the PPP unit, a very important partner. And together with my colleagues in DCS, Mr. Mosteki, who is our Chief Deputy Commissioner responsible for corrections and facilities, falls under his component. He's the key person, supported by Mr. Van Andra, who we have appointed during the course of last year to drive our infrastructural development trust. As the Deputy Commissioner specializing in facilities, I hope he will show why we have appointed him. And I also have years supporting us, and I don't know if I should feel honored, but the person responsible for the budget program of the Justice Cluster at National Treasury, including DCS's budget, well known to you, Ms. Mbete. She is the Chief Director for Justice and Protection Services. I suspect he's here for tomorrow's budget vote, and he heard about this meeting and thought he'll come here and put some more pressure on us, what he does best. Supported by, he's here with Mr. Erasmus, who's of course the Senior Budget Analyst in Treasury. On my right, I have the Director in my office, Ms. Shabalala. Jefferson, we welcome this opportunity to again talk to you following our meeting on the 22nd of May, as I've said, where we tried to focus on particularly the building of the new correctional centres. And you will recall at that meeting what we did was to present to you the findings of the work having been undertaken by the transaction advisor. And the case, business case being made by the transaction advisor through the feasibility study that we are compelled to have done, given the size of this project, and therefore the recommendations emanating from the report of the transaction advisor. And we've asked the PPP unit to perhaps again, as we get into discussion, be ready to reflect on the findings of the transaction advisor. The minister has made an announcement that we've accepted the recommendations of the transaction advisor in respect of the building of five correctional facilities. He has sought the concurrence of both the minister of finance and the minister of public works. And I think what we will do is report back on progress since then. Been quite a very intense process, but I think I can quite confidently say that we're well on the way and really moving beyond the promise to really being involved in the serious business of procurement. And some of that detail will be reflected on. You have raised the issue of Kimberley itself, while, of course, we will report to you about some of the delays that is happening that's natural for these type of projects. We were quite excited about the fact that the building is going up and rising quite fast, and we will also give you some sense of why we're excited about the Kimberley project. But obviously, Chairperson, I don't think we want to come and just talk about facilities in a dry way. This is the Portfolio Committee, and I think it's important that we always place into context the issues of infrastructural challenges within DCS and our overall approach to it. We are quite aware and very very keen to correct the mistakes of the past. We're aware of the fact that we've now, it's our second term since the President, 2 terms ago, the President announced the building of the first four. And so we really feel quite embarrassed that the situation has delayed. We can put those delays in historical context. In fact, I think the answer that we arrived at in how we should procure the 5 new correctional facilities indeed provide some of the, or rather the reason why we accepted the answer in part, provide some of the reason why that is in fact a better approach, because we do know our experience with DPPs is that they always deliver on time in budget as the main factor. Chairperson, with regard to the issues around infrastructure, just briefly to say that we need to look at this in the broader context, because you know that we do have the major challenge when it comes to infrastructure, not only in terms of the backlog that we have to catch up on as a country, given the overcrowding that we face with, but also the fact that I think the inspecting judge last year made a very strong comment of correctional facilities being largely warehouses, and that being quite inconsistent with the rehabilitation and correction thrust of the organization. So I think we need to keep in mind that we have the challenge of transforming our existing facilities and maintaining our existing facilities. Even when it comes to the maintenance program, we are dealing with serious backlogs. The truth of the matter is, the longer you take to maintain your infrastructure, the more costly it becomes. And if it becomes neglected to the point where you have to replace it, you can imagine the cost becomes quite unaffordable. I think when we look at the building of new correctional facilities, we must look at it within the context of us also having to respond to that challenge, which in itself constitutes a major part of what it is that we do when it comes to infrastructure. Just to give you some examples, we're busy with a project in Drakenstein where we are replacing 474 inmate cells at a cost of 13 million at Mzinto Correctional Centre. There's a replacement of an outdated facility where we're creating capacity for 445 inmates at a cost of 25 million. At Brunsley Correctional Centre, we are replacing 348 cells. At Voorberg, we're extending and replacing outdated facilities with a new centre with a capacity for 1,348 inmates at a cost of 94 million. At Goodwood, there was a new facility built for waiting child inmates in during our time. The same with Malmesbury. Mfungeni, we've seen the new building of the correctional centre. And so on. I think what I'm trying to say is that the building of the new facilities is just part of a broader trust, and there are huge amounts set aside for our infrastructural development program as it is. The challenge of building 8, because that's really what we're dealing with, the challenge of building 8 new correctional facilities presents, of course, a key challenge in terms of not only the management of such infrastructural projects, but also the cost element. And I think we will engage with how this route that we are taking is providing us with certain opportunities to deal with the need going forward, whilst we can continue to deal with the major backlog, both in terms of our maintenance program and expanding the current capacity that we have at some of our existing facilities. But that's just briefly. I'm going to ask the CDC corrections to lead us in the presentation that we have forwarded to the committee. And from there to perhaps just ask my colleagues from Public Works and Treasury if they want to amplify with your concurrence, and then we will be ready to engage the committee further. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Commissioner. Once again, good morning, honorable members. I haven't had an opportunity, Chair, myself, to be in this committee this year, so I hope that honorable members have enjoyed the December holidays and eager to assist us once again with the start of our work in the course of this year. The presentation of
not like you were in Mauritius. You were in Mauritius. These poor members were working the whole Christmas holidays. You were there.
I can bet. I'm
sitting in the lake there. No, it's fine, Mr.
Now, Chairperson, the presentation that we are going to be making to yourself, as your essay or request will cover the following areas. We intend to cover the health somewhat the same ground that we covered on the 2nd of May, around demonstrating to you the value for money arising out of the decision that the Minister has taken with respect to following the route of building these facilities, the PCT route, in the one hand. Secondly, to present to you, Chair, which is the worry that you have expressed, the project plan around the building of this new facility, giving you a sense of timelines around how we're going to be going about in doing this, dealing with this issue. In your invitation of us to come here, one of the things that you have raised is to express concern about the concerns that were expressed partly by SCOPA around potential conflict of interest that individual staff could potentially have in the process of negotiating this transaction. We intend to answer and demonstrate how we're going to be taking care of that specific risk. And also the value of the risk transfer that is associated with the building of this facility, the PPP route. We will touch, as Commissioner said, on Kimberley, demonstrate to you the work that has been done. As he has indicated, we are very excited about this. And lastly, that there has been concerns that the portfolio committee has expressed about Polokwane, just to give you a sense about what we're doing currently with respect to that. But I'm going to ask Mr. Van Andras to just make this presentation to yourself.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, members. I wasn't in Mauritius over December. Just to set the context of very briefly, because there was quite a few reports before that gave the content and context of how we have evolved to where we are now. But just a quick update, as the Chair has pointed out, since 2002, the new facilities were identified, and the strategy at the time was to take it into two phases, where initially we were input from specialists to develop a prototype. The intention was to have a very detailed design from which then the other facilities that would evolve from there just be developed the site documentation for specifically to save costs and effectively time in future on that. So the prototype was then developed, and the first project that was identified was
Kimberley to proceed. However, I think it should be mentioned that in the meantime, that's when the requirements were clear from Treasury that where there's major projects, there should be a feasibility study done, which obviously caused the other projects, the other seven, to be exposed to that process. To go down the list, the first phase was the four sites, of which Leeuwkop, Nigel, Clarkthorpe and Kimberley was identified. And then the second phase, the four sites of Polokwane, Powell, Arundale, Port Shepstone and East London. Just to report firstly on Leeuwkop, the correctional centre was stopped due to environmental impact assessment recommendations, and so the outcome of the viability study, because of the development of the very lot of suburbs around the facility, initially it was standing on its own, but now it's a lot of facilities in that area that wouldn't like the department to be there, and is actually the special groups who would like us to relocate. So the viability study is going into assessing should we continue with the project there, or should we rather sell and look at alternative option there. So that's just to take a long-term view due to the latest developments in that area. On Polokwane, there was a site identified as part of the second phase, and when the research started as part of the feasibility study, the site was actually became problematic as the owners of the site, because there was no government site available, so we had to acquire the site from privately owned owners, and they actually were far above market related value, which caused the problem for the department. So the project was suspended on that basis. The feasibility study that was referred to by the Commissioner on the 22nd of May, the transaction advisor that was appointed were various specialists to do the feasibility study in compliance with the National Strategic Requirements for major projects, presented their details on the 22nd of May, and there would have been subsequent the 6th of November meeting that was postponed. The Nigel and Clarkthorpe Correctional Centres were added to the three projects which remained, because as I reported just before, there was eight, of which Leeuwkop was suspended based on the viability study, and Polokwane due to site conditions. So that three was remained, then the additional Nigel and Clarkthorpe was added to the correctional centres that were part of the feasibility study, which then included the five centres. Part of the feasibility study explores the value for money aspect that was reported earlier. The transaction advisor recommended in the feasibility study that the PPP procurement option is best value for money. This was based on a financial model of the costing of all services, and based on this cost and estimate, then it was a look at where the risks lie, and then the risk adjustment for this project to see where best governance will be served, and to cost all maintenance, all risks inherent to projects and maintaining facilities and running programs. The graph there still shows the value for money on the left-hand side, and then the PSC is the public sector comparator that was presented at this time. The PFM is the public finance model, which was closer to the PPP. That's actually the one that a PPP without the operations included, where correctional services actually still keep the their core function, the facilities and the construction and the design and the maintenance thereof will be outsourced. Then the optimal risk transfer, which is shown on the graph, is the, where the PPP has been proven according to the recommendations, which was then accepted by the Commissioner and Treasury based on their detailed assessment. So that gives the background for why the PPP option was considered. The feasibility and option analysis performed on specified and pre-agreed output specifications, which is the main cost drivers for the PPP, meaning that we don't want to tell private sector how to do it, but what is the outcome that we want to allow for the efficiencies and also for their options they might explore. And based on that, there is a view that we will achieve better value for money, better risk transfer and affordability in the overall context of these major projects. On risk transfer, just to go into a little bit more detail, the challenges on normal projects obviously are that government do have construction risk on conventional projects, whereas in PPPs it's transferred to the private party. They do not get paid. There was reference made in the speech to say that there's no money on the budget for these new ones, but it's because the PPP allowance of unity fee is only paid when they actually complete the construction and operational. So they only get paid when they're actually delivering the service. So if they delay the project, if they got problems, we're not out of pocket. So what the important issue is here is that they need to address management of delays and cost overruns by the private party. We will not reimburse and pay more for their losses. Similarly, the facilities management, maintenance of facilities and return of the after 25 years of operations in good condition by a private party. So this it means that they have to, the quicker they can construct the facility, which some of the other PPPs were done very short, in a very short time because there's a big incentive, because they incur the cost, the quicker they can turn around the construction, the interest that's run on the infrastructure is beneficial to them. So they got a huge incentive, which is not necessarily always on a normal conventional project. So after that, then they have a 25-year operation in, that they need to maintain this facility, whereas the challenges governments have is yes, you build a new facility, but then you've got a shortfall on maintenance, where this is all inclusive. So then after 25 years, we get a facility returned to us still in a good condition. So we see that in that context, that is one of the major benefits from this process. And in terms of management of operations, they have to be creative and also upgrade in terms of security risk. They need to respond to all those challenges with these heavy penalties should there something go wrong. Health risks. They need to respond in terms of that. Provision for program risks, education, correctional, social skills, issues like food services, all those challenges and logistics can be responded to by the private party and add to value for money. In terms of managing the risk and integrity that was referred to earlier, what the each party that is going to be part of this evaluation panel, which will personally be appointed by the commissioner, that's the subcommittee that will do the basic evaluation. Then there will be a committee from the department that assesses that, and that's actually at the end presented to the National Bid Adjudication Committee. So there will be three tiers of committees to ensure that the quality and management of all of this actually covers all the risks. Every participant in the government signs a confidentiality contract, a code of conduct, and a declaration of interest. That includes the transaction advisor consultant team that is part of this. There's also a vetting process of all evaluation members that has been started to also address risk in that sense. The continuous auditing by both internal and external auditors will be part of this process, and our supply chain is has observation status to ensure that we toe the line and we do actually comply to all supply chain requirements. National security is also very part of this process to ensure that we do get stick to best practices and have the required outcome. The separation of responsibilities of evaluation between the three tiers of the evaluation committee, I've already noted, that was specifically done so that it actually addresses all the management of the department to be all covered, and that all risks are assessed and appropriately included in the contract. In terms of the current status of the PPP process, just to repeat on the scope, that was each of the centres of the five provides for plus minus 3,000 beds. The category is flexible in terms of medium and maximum offenders, as we've got a movement in figures in terms of the classification, so we need to have that flexibility in the facilities. The contract term, as reported before, we said 3 years construction, but it can be quite short, depending on the efficiency of the contractor, can be shorter, and 25-year operation period. We've fully compliant with the broad-based black economic empowerment requirements that we are responding to. And in terms of the progress on the project, the request for qualification, the RFQ, this closed on 10th of December for the five PPCs. The responses, received responses, five bidders for each of the projects. No late submission for the RFQ received, and we have we are now basically in process with the evaluation. The RFQ evaluations are targeted to be completed at the end of April 2008, and then based on that we will then do the announcements for the various projects. Then the next stage is the request for proposal documents. All these documents are approved by National Treasury to ensure quality and compliance. The RFQ will be issued shortly after the RFQ evaluation is completed. And the important thing is here, we've got a stage where we actually send it for comments to the consortium to actually have the benefit of their values input to where we think that, that there might be improvements to be made to actually enhance value for money and affordability. Because a lot of times they know exactly how it's tracked and they can see where there can be these benefits. We also got on the transaction advisor team a specialist in from overseas that actually contributes to best practices in this proposal. The RFP submission is expected back around September 2008. We should note that it's fairly onerous. We were in the UK in November, and they are doing two PPPs, 600 one and a 700 one. And they were actually started before us, and they will end after us. So we've got a very... it's quite a challenging program, and we are looking at adding 15,000 beds where they are adding 1,300. So not just the Kuni Kenneth will be, this project I think is in context here, also quite a big project that we're dealing with. The whole process is in terms of PPP regulations, regulation 16 of PSMA and the DCS supply chain management. The process to be verified continuously by our internal audit. Just to give more factual feedback as required by the chairperson on the Kimberley, that's an aerial photo from the latest event. So you can see there's been substantial building work on the project. And the go to the next slide. As background, this is the first of the original eight to be built with a capacity of 3,000 attenders. The construction was, the tender was awarded to Greenacre LTA, Kerem Kula, at 662 million. The site handover date was the 14th November 2006. The contractual period is 24 months. The original completion date was 14th November 2008. The extended completion date we are looking now at February 2009. The percentage work completed that's been certified is obviously progress is further than that, but that's what has been certified for payment is 35% of the contract value. That is at the 31st of January. Just a few photos on progress. You see, obviously, and I'll elaborate on this very labor intensive, these projects. It actually creates a very big, a lot of jobs. But on the bottom left, that is the cell unit that we are attempting to do a completion of one full cell unit which responds to unit management and direct supervision and rehabilitation requirements that the department is trying to achieve. So that cell unit should be one of the first buildings to be completed. On the right-hand side, that's the general progress. On the right bottom, that is where the, a passageway that is being created secure passage for linking all the various facilities. Next one. The project has a lot of jobs that are created and has responded to a lot of government initiatives. Specific to labor force, the total workforce is 1,172 that we've, the latest report that we've received. The local labor workforce from the area which is benefiting most is 1,099 jobs. Then the present ex-offender workforce is 137 that is working there, who is benefiting from also from this project and to ensure their continued employment through this. Then when one of the important initiatives is the National Youth Service for training youth, that there's 90 trainees that are part of this project. I think if I recall correctly, in May, the latest should be completed with their training in various trades in the construction industry. The present female workforce component is 91. And the HDI workforce is there's 14 contractors that are currently working, and that relates to 29.79% of the contract value will actually be allocated to these historically disadvantaged enterprises. We received a letter to have a little bit more specifics from the chairperson, so we try to give you more detail on Kimberley in terms of the contract price, excluding that, is 581 million. the contract price adjustment provision, which is the escalation allowance in terms of the contract with ABCC contract, you get your initial tender price, and then because the contract is based that the allowance is made in the contract for escalation, it's actually calculated on top of that. So you, people might mistake. The mistake is to say, well, this is the tender price, because we pay that tender price, but because it runs over 2 years, and you cannot always predict, especially now with escalation running at such a high cost, it's important to note that this provision actually is not a cost overrun, it's a contract condition, which actually this, in terms of the VAR and the HALEU formula that is being used, it actually responds to this clause in the contract. And obviously the VAT is also part of this. So the current budget allowance for the project is around 810 million, which is, has some allowance for unforeseen costs. So that's just in short from my side, just on the update.
Thank you very much.
May I just emphasize, because the manager has come through, we're basically saying that the five typically facilities are on track. Brett and Kimberley representing the sixth one. About the two others, just to perhaps again clarify, the Leeuwkop one, you will know that we have started earthworks at Leeuwkop. And subsequent to that, we've had to put a stop to it because of the complaint around the frog, you remember the frog issue. But since then, the question really is that, you know, given the urban creep that we have seen within that area of Clanton, whether we should proceed to build the additional capacity at that site. And so the viability study for the future of Leeuwkop is in progress. And so therefore we are waiting the outcome of that study to decide whether we are proceeding or whether we will have to relocate that project itself. And then finally, just again to emphasize that despite the fact that our initial negotiations around the land in Polokwane meant that we had to step back and we could not include Polokwane in the initial grouping, we have asked Public Works to pursue vigorously the issue of finding an alternative site. There's not no shortage of land, I'm sure. It's really in terms of the cost issues in negotiations. So that's the account for the egg, and I thought I needed just to close it up. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Maybe the other departments want to add something, they are free, but they can also respond to some of the questions that we are. The commissioner will guide when you, but you are free to comment now. If you think later on, it's also fine, but you are free to comment now. Before I'm giving the members time.
Chair, thank you very much. I think most everything has already been said and we'll chip in as we go along. Just wanted to caution the committee through you, Chair, that given that the five prisons are in fact the subject of a competitive tender, we need to be cautious in mentioning specific figures and budgets, because the private parties are still going to respond to those in the RFP, so we may be limited in what we can say on those actual budget numbers. Thank you, Chair.
You see, sir, we are dealing with the budget of the Department of Correctional Services as this portfolio. Now, if you have indicated that before, we could have said it's a closed meeting. But we can't give a blank check to the department to say, build this prison. And then tomorrow, or after a week, the new budget is coming to us. We must now approve that budget to say, no, it's fine. But we don't know the tenders and whoever. We want to be part and parcel of that decision.
of the whole process of building of the prison. I agree for now that we are not going to ask that question, but we are going to ask it in a close meeting. We want to know, and who is the contractors who have tendered, or who is on the short list of, because it's very much important to ask, to know, so that we must not fall into the same trap as the other two, the Limpopo one and the Bloemfontein one. We want transparency in this whole thing. But I'm going to give members a chance. But before that, you know, I forgot to introduce Mpo. We are having a dedicated recession. You have started on the 1st of February with us. It's not an ANC researcher, but he is a parliamentary researcher for the committee. He is doing work for the committee. That's Mpo Matabate, a very young man, very, very young. Commissioner, I think that we send a letter to introduce Mpo to the department, and we were saying in that letter that the necessary cooperation must be given to him, because he's going to do, if incident wants figures of the prison, how many children are in the prison. He is the person that Mr. Civil Citizen must call and say, can you please do research on that? So the necessary cooperation, Commissioner, must be given. I am officially introducing to the committee and to you and everybody, so that you know it's not a group from, he is having a, it's looking like someone in CMEX, but he's not one of those. So he's one of our people now. And the second one, Mayor Winnie Ngwenya participated in the State of the National Address, and she represents us very, very well as the ANC, not as a portfolio commission, as the ANC component. And I want to congratulate Mayor Winnie Ngwenya. That was a very good presentation, Mayor Winnie Ngwenya. We must say this thing. We must not say these things when a member is not no more there. And we must appreciate when a member is still there. But members, I'm going to give time. I see Ms. Sitton, Mr. Self, Mr. Mahmoud, Bishop Solo, Nkosi Solo, Nengwenya, and Cindy, and I will be the last.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. There are many questions. I will tell you the financial ones at this stage. But perhaps the most pressing question is the one that I need to ask, and that is, what are the time frames? You know, we've been talking about these prisons now, as we've heard, since 2002. There are still no time frames in here. When can we anticipate completion of all the prisons? I have a particular interest in one, as you well know, called Chepstow. I have meetings on a regular basis, and I keep on being asked what is happening. I certainly am not in a position to tell anybody, because we don't have any clues. So I'd just like to know what time frames we're looking at here.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'd like to ask the department, it might be the Department of Public Works who has to answer this, about the sites concerned. Now, the Commissioner said that there was, there'd been a request for an urgent investigation into an alternative site in Polokwane. It now seems that there might be an alternative site for Leeuwkop. But in terms of the sites, have all the other sites been actually identified? Has the land been secured? Has the, you know, is all that part of the process squared away, so that when the bid process has been adjudicated and completed, can construction work begin almost immediately? And if not, when, what sort of delays are we talking about? In this connection, then, secondly, just about the site work, because my understanding was that when we were previously briefed, in respect of Leucorp, I think, and Nigel, in both cases, certain site works had already taken place before the process was halted. What is the status of those site works at the moment? Are they still integral? Are they still appropriate? Will they still be able to use that, the money that was expended, or is that, in a sense, money down the drain and we need to move on from here? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, firstly, I just want to know, Chairperson, I hear that the presenter spoke about the value for money, but I'm not sure. I did not get the final details because I remember you asked this question in some meeting. But that as it may, my question is about the kind of prisons that are going to be built. Because I just want to know what informed the department on a turn to PPP model. Because as I understand, in fact, as I remember, all of us, including the department, were not happy with the present PPP prisons. What informed the department to change to that? Because even the announcement about this in 2002-2004, the announcement was about the new generation prison. Now, what informed the department? Because now I hear the commissioner saying that the minister announced the PPP. And in one of the meetings that we had, when those options were... We talked about those options. We were expecting the department to come back to us and say, this is the option that we have taken. Here's the reason. But the announcement says they have just mentioned now about the PPP, and the announcement has been made. Are we going to talk about the option, or are we just going to accept that it's the PPP? Because I remember we even got all of us. We were not happy about the escalating costs of the two that are there. Now, has anything changed? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Who is next? Bishop Dolo.
Why don't you, Professor? But, Professor, you remember the contract. The gun here is in as a damn one or less mark. But they might use them rach, but they might use them for here. Depend what the service that provided for them from Polokwan, as a commissioner and Becky. Elevate as a dazzle Polokwan, and yet who had a prize, the excellent allegation. Elevate who had a prize. Yeah. You don't ever get for the term. You would have a piece of product. The department, what a little pop or drop net elephant was new pop. Who comes to serve for the term?
I want to understand in such meetings, are the department taken
serious
or not? Because
when the full of one. A quality and that was at the front from that. I said, let me play that of the door. One of them seven there, I mean, one of them being, I mean, seven there per kilometer from Polokwane, that you could cool. And that place, president, has got to say no that toy. When I was at that place, I said, who come that was a die from that of the Pandasan? From! But the sun next can battle. Or the party died in her project. No, the commissioner, as I said, Patrick West came and gave the flag. No, that's the day for me, as I was proud. I love about the court.
Bishop, you're saying that you always raise the issue of, I'm just summarizing, you're always raising the issue of the site. Lenses are bigger than, and you always raise it when we come to. Prison in
Yeah. Nou, één dag dat die ziel 70. De minister had me antwoorden. Maar ik was niet de vrede die antwoordde van hem. Hij heeft voor mij gezegd. Jij, Tolo, moet je daar met de fabriek wel samen met hen gaan praten. Omdat ze dat groot. Maar vandaag, commissioner, hij zei. En het samen met de fabriek wel om naar de kerk. Ik stem samen met hem. Maar ik heb gezien de minister die voor mij antwoordde. Ik heb gezien in mijn nacht. Die zijn wat voor mijn kop staan voorzitter. Dat wat ik zei. Ik weet niet wat er ons kop. Als ons ziet op praat, ons praat maar net. En dan wat voor die is kop. Van den. En gewoon hier een zoeken plek. Die zijn wat ik zei van hier maak in mijn arbeid. Als ons hier daar kan worden uitgerond aan de provincie. Daar gaan we zeer krijgen. Want hij maakt om laten ons zijn. Hoe komt? Onze hele grond is daar zo. Want samen die kinderen kukuni. Samen de kapitein, samen elkaar gepraat. En die leer van de executive leer, alle. Onze die brief naar die kantoor. Het departement van gestuurd. Maar als je kan ook worden, hij moet van de dag gestuurd. En dat hem zeker is. Voor die dag zit hem gesteld. Dat is wel wat de public works heeft gezegd. Hij moet het schijnt vergeten. Ons kan hij blij. Die blijft in staat. En nou, dat is wat ik zei. Hoe kom, voorzitter, laat ik het hebben. Zo hier is dan het nog een keer. Vooral, je ziet. Ik denk, hier mag het steeds dat ze de plek zoeken. Dat is public works. Ik weet nog, kan hij de roep zien zo. Als je hier nog een plek, hier nog een tijdje een plek zoekt, als je een plek zoekt, gaan we net betalen. Zie? Gaan we net betalen. En dat is wat we zoeken. En die andere die voorzitter, ik weet niet wat gaan aan daar op Limpopo. Die Department of Corrections is het leed met Limpopo. En hij komt een beetje achter. Als je kan zien daar zo bij Zane, het rond van Zane. Ons kan niet wonen met je dag als ons kan. En dat zijn al die mensen. En dat ze daarvan hebben getrokken. Niemand het ziet daarvan. Tijdens laat ik jullie de waarheid zeggen. Het is een goed proces. Dat is wat ik zei. Mijn kwestie. Wat er ons koopt als een Frans of niet. Gaan er nog plek kijken. Hoe komt? Want onze plek is daar zo. Hoe komt dat niet public website? Er zijn mensen wat ze zeggen, er is een plek waar ons niks kan vertalen. Zij dingen worden vertoond. Dat wordt met zij dingen, ik mag mijn kop staan. Maar dat
is... De bishop is saying that there's land available. I will propose that public works is here, bishop. Correctional service is here. You must meet with them after the meeting. And sit with them. Public Works, there's Bishop Tolo. Bishop Tolo is saying there's land available. Correctional Services, there's land available. Sit with Bishop Tolo after the meeting so that you discuss this issue. Mayor Winning Green.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question is based on low-cop facilities. Chairperson, on this change of the general background on building new facilities, I don't know what page is it here, there's no numbers here. There's a first phase and a second phase. Therefore, Chairperson, I'm worried because the feasibility study of LOCOP was underway during 2006 and 2007 financial year. So my question, Chairperson, will be, what is the latest information in this regard? Also, Chairperson, I'm worried if we are busy talking about this first phase and second phase, and there's no time frame when this building gonna finish, and now we're supposed to talk maybe about third phase, in terms of awaiting try center. I don't know what are we doing, Chairperson. We propose and the department come with a nice plan, and we also passes the bill in terms of building these centers. But if we don't have time frame with ladies of Telamini, I don't know what are we doing, Chairperson. I need that clarity. I thank you.
Some years back, Mr. Chairperson, we visited Tukuyondo, and over there we found 59 inmates using one bathroom. And at the time, this bathroom was out of order and had not been taken care of. Also, we went down to Middle Drift on the Eastern Cape. We found the same thing. My question is, in terms of these new generation centers that are being built, are we taking care of a number of inmates per bathroom so that that congestion, that clumsiness of the place should be looked at and we avoid this type of thing? And secondly, Mr. Chairperson, the commissioner mentioned some maintenances that are being done countrywide in some centers. I want to find out about Pochestin, because last time we went there, that center was terrible. I want to find out whether is there anything that is being done to maintain it, seeing that it's taking so long to have these centers coming off the ground. Thank you, Chairperson.
But I have reported on Pochestin, the development there after the regional, the area, is it area commission, regional commissioner, Mr. Nadim Dedwa, Nkeko, gave us feedback on the development there. There is renovation taking place. I have reported it in the meeting of correctional services, even before a recess, Nkosi. But the commission is free to respond again, so that you must hear. Cindy?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I will still ask a question on maintenance, because I think if it is done, on an ad hoc basis. If the department or even the public works for this matter have a maintenance strategy that is applicable countrywide, And that can be monitored and evaluated. Because otherwise, I think, not only for correctional services for this matter, even for the department, I just want to check on the country. But also, I think we're sitting here for, I don't know, but it is for quite some time that we've been talking about this prison. And each time a presentation is made, I never hear that the department will acknowledge the fact that there was indeed poor planning in the whole thing. And with serious cost implications and other implications for that matter. Can we accept that indeed there was poor planning? And Chairperson, I will still go back to the very question that was asked by Maho, just to say, I remember when we were sitting with the department, it was reporting about these two PPP prisons. Actually, the department told us that they are seeking a legal advice as to whether it was possible to probably shorten the contract with the two prisons, because of the cost and so on. What has changed now? Why did we have to waste time talking about something that is so wonderful? And the department was telling us that the two prisons are not in a position to address some of our problems. For instance, it cannot relieve overcrowding in our prison, because if they take 3,000, they can't take 3,001. So it must always be 3,000. What has changed now? Because the problems in our correctional services are still there, mainly overcrowding as the basis of any other problem that you have in the department. I just want to know, and I'm asking from probably a point of being ignorant about some of these things, but understanding what the department keeps on telling us each time it sits before us. I also, Chairperson, wanted to know. I hear the presenter saying the developments in Zimbabwe are such. I'm not very sure really if there is anything to be excited about in Zimbabwe. Because for the very fact that the date of completion is no longer 2008, 2009, and it's not like it was supposed to be 2008 in any way, but probably we might welcome the progress, the slow progress from that measure that is taking place there, but really nothing to excite us because there's cost implications in the delays that we are seeing there. So I think that we have been, as the portfolio committee, we have been very understanding and tolerant. But I think the whole thing is just, sometimes you feel like there's a lot of confusion for whatever reason that we might not know as we are seated here as a portfolio committee and not with the department every day, for whatever reasons that we might also not understand. I hope maybe in future when we say we're excited, we'll be meaning excited because of progress that is tangible, progress that we can actually see to say from this date this has happened. But not progress, that is just not there, and we get excited about it. So personally, I'm surely not excited. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Cindy. When you respond, I just want to read minutes. The thing that Cindy was saying in Katema Hote on the meeting on the 2nd of May 2006, what the minister said on behalf of you. The department made a significant policy shift away from public-private partnerships, triple P prison. This was based on the cost of the two already existing triple P prisons. On the basis of international debate about the constitutionality of private companies being responsible for the incarceration of citizens, and on the basis of the assessment that in a number of respects the current situation was not enabling the management of the correctional system in a fashion that was in line with the department's white paper. Private companies did not have a clear understanding of the white paper. They were not as focused as the department's officials, and they were not addressing critical problems such as overcrowding and rehabilitation. That was from the minister and from you. Now, we as this portfolio committee want to understand why this shift now? Why? And you see, the question that Ntate Mahote was asking, that we as the committee must be convinced that this is value for money. But up until now, we are not convinced. 300 million rand for one, Bloemfontein. 300 million for Limpopo. Please convince us so that we must be part and parcel. 25 years contract. What are we leaving behind for the generations to come? 25 years. The civil citizen will go, Dennis Bloom will go, himself will go, everybody. We are leaving people with a lot of problems for 25 years. What benefit does government, this government, get from this 25-year contract?
Yes, thank you. Where do we begin? Excitement, not excitement. Let me say quite unequivocally, when it comes to this debate of us not seeing any prison going up since 2002, when it finally gets up to Cindy. Praise God for small mercies. There is a prison going up, and we thought we'll bring you the photograph to show you there's one going up. Are we happy? We're happy about that. Are we satisfied? Not completely. I think the question that a number of members have asked, we're talking here about eight. Kimberley is one out of eight. And if we have to turn that into percentage, it would be a fail. So, in terms of the five that we're talking about, we're excited about it because we have received a number of requests for qualifications, responses to our requests, and those things are there, and there's a process that we have set. In fact, there's a time frame attached to it. The decision we've set in terms of that process, by the end of April, we would have wanted to conclude the evaluations of the request for qualification, after which we will proceed with the bid, the competitive processes, putting out specs and people responding to that. I think there was a September timeline, and perhaps when responding they can just lift out those timelines. And so when we say that quite clearly, the end period for the five would be 2010, if my reading is correct. 2010-2011 financial year. All five. And so we're on track in terms of that process is concerned. The evaluation process of the first phase, in terms of request for qualification, where we're looking at the capacity of the consortium who are out there ready to bid. And we've had a very good response to that. So there's some activity in the market. And we've also said that we're working very closely with others, such as Partnership UK, to make sure that we get the best practices when dealing with the procurement of these facilities. But let me just deal with the issue of this indecision, Jefferson, over the years since 2002. And let me try and just say, firstly, the issue of procuring correctional facilities, and I said to my colleagues, as National Commissioner, and given the overcrowding that I'm confronted with, my bottom line is I want correctional facilities. I want correctional facilities. What we have said as DCS is that if it's up to us, we would procure those facilities in a particular way. For all the reasons that you've felt, or the Minister said, that from our experience we are being unfairly compared to PPPs at DCS. We know it's costly. All those factors that made us analyze three or two alternative models or come up with a desired alternative that we really as a department felt we could subscribe to. And you will recall part of our dialogue with you has been around the concept of the PFM model, public finance model, something that as a department we really thought we could put that up. What the feasibility process does, which you have to do in terms of the law, is to look at all those procurement methods, the traditional way of procuring, in the way that we have procured Kimberley, the proposed public finance model that we have said is our preferred way of doing so, and the PPP model. And put that in the equation where one then look at the issues of risk transfer and value for money and affordability issues. And when that happens, unfortunately, we have subjected ourselves to a legislative process. And if there's an outcome to that that tells us that the PSM model that we prefer is not a viable one, and that the value for money and the best option and the only option that government should follow is the PPP route, then the question is, do we pray for this study and reject the findings and then go back into battle to find the funds for that, knowing the cost of procuring so many new correctional facilities in itself the thing that may make it impossible for government to do exactly that, given the cost imperatives and the choices that we have to make as a country. And this is, in fact, if we ask about a delay, Chairperson, and why the delay has occurred, is exactly because of that reason. You will recall that many years back, Chairperson has, in fact, given us money to build those four correctional facilities through the traditional procurement method. And you will recall that for each of those facilities, they've given us 350 million rand, if my memory serves me correct. That money has remained on our budget for many years while we were fighting about what procurement method to follow. In the meantime, the cost in 2003-04 that they've given us that money, 350 million, by the time we were ready to make the decision, escalated to 800 million rand. And this is the cost of government processes and inefficiencies, and that makes it completely impossible for us to in a rational way, follow through with what we believe may be the correct procurement method. So what has changed? What has changed is quite clearly that we have a feasibility study that goes into the detail that tell us that if you do not do this, these will be the results. We will be paying a lot more. So quite clearly, Chairperson, those concerns, that doesn't do away with the concerns that we have said we have in relation to PPPs as a department. I think what we need to do is, as we continue with the development of the specifications in this round, that we really begin to take best practices on board. And this is why we want to work closely with experts, and we want to take our own lessons with the current PPPs and say, how do we maximize the benefits and how do we reduce those things that gave rise to dissatisfaction amongst the department. Not we will that we will be solving all those problems, but I think we have an opportunity to make sure that we get the best deal out of this process, if it is inevitable, as how the process unfolded. So our position theoretically has not changed. We would still prefer to run those, to build it and to run it according to the traditional method. But we don't make these decisions by ourselves. They are bases upon which these decisions are made, and we need to follow the processes. Chairperson, I know that that may not satisfy all of us. I can tell you we, going forward, we believe some of those questions must still be answered, as the ministers asked at the time, around the the extent to which we will continue to build these facilities. Apart from the fact that we're talking about this group, we know that replacing some of our older facilities and the possibility of us building remand detention facilities will keep this debate alive into the future. And I think we must answer some of those questions that the minister is asking. Because if we're going to subject it to a feasibility study, we're going to get a particular set of results, unfortunately. I don't want to, I deliberately just wanted to cover the broad issues that we're dealing with rather than going into the specifics. And perhaps I could ask Mr. Fernandra, the Deputy Commissioner, just to lift out the time frame so that the members are quite clear, in both in respect of Kimberley as well as in respect of the five CPPs that we are procuring in the moment.
Thank you, Commissioner. Just to maybe start with Kimberley, just to reiterate what you said, I think the previous speaker also mentioned that we shouldn't get excited when there's a 3-month delay. It's not just being excited about that. But the indications are that based on the delay, it's February 2009. That's the target date at the moment. What we should understand is that the realities we sit with is the contract allows, if it rains, they get extension, which is not under our control. And we were very blessed with lots of rain through this period. So, and it has sometimes quite extensive when you coming out of the ground. It's got not just a day it rains, it's got a problem. So we must understand that's not bad management is a simple fact. If it rains, it's got an implication, it delays the project. She's got huge impact also, obviously, on cash flow and all that. So that's something that's not in our control. But that's where the incentives of the PPP obviously comes out, where they tend to draw that back by accelerating the project, which got the balance in terms of finances. But that's just in terms of Kimberley. So it's, to reiterate that we're looking at February at the moment, also depending on delays and rain that might further incur. To report on the others, the part that we've reported on here, in the, we said that April 2007 in this report, my presentation, we're targeting the shortlisting for the tender. So it means that we will be looking at a short, because of the very extensive nature of the tender process, it really cost them R1 million to make the proposal. We cannot afford having lots of them tendering and then only one gets tender. It's not cost effective. So we need to have a shortlisting process wherein we then, when they get shorter, they have got a good chance of getting the tender. That we cut down on the tender cost for these projects. I must say we've had a very good response. We actually, when we did the briefing session to the tenders after end of last year, we had a venue of 120 seats in Victoria. We actually ended up with 140 people. What we additionally did is we actually got everybody's electronic information and capture that and actually distribute it to everybody so that and the roles they would like to be part of in terms of this consortium. It was a very complex project, but we wanted the maximum opportunity for all role players to benefit from the exposure so that to give them an opportunity to become part of these big projects. So that's part of our process that we followed, and we had a very good response all over overseas and in South Africa in terms of this. To elaborate, so the that was the RFQ, that's the initial stage shortlisting. The RFQ.
Sorry, the question that Mr. Mahote asked. So with other words, it's all over. You are going to build that triple T. You are going on with it. That was the question that Mr. Mahote asked.
If I may just allow for him to deal with it at the time sense, and then I would like to, indeed, we are proceeding with a triple P for the five, but I would like perhaps again just to ask the PPP unit just to see if we can reflect some of the issues that gave rise to the findings of the transaction advisor. In fact, in our preparatory and I asked, you've got a message, so you may just want to revisit that so that we answer that question directly. If you just put a deal with the time frame.
What we also reported, as Commissioner mentioned, the RFP, that is where the actual shortlisted people submit their proposals. That we are at the moment targeting of September 2008. Then we anticipate the construction to start in 2009. Start. To start. 2009, and the completion is obviously 2010-2011. That's determined on how quick the contractor obviously executes the work. We don't give them a fixed time frame because they've got the incentive of the quicker they do it, the quicker they can get units into payment. So they try and turn it around as quickly as possible. But obviously, with the submissions, they will give a projected time frame. So we're looking at that's about the time frame. For that, we on so that covers the five and Kimberley. For Lekwane, depending on the site, we will be able to get a. Because all these feasibilities, as I just may mention, the site has got a huge impact, and these are covered in terms of the risks that have been assessed by the feasibility study. So there's one of the requirements normally that treasury doesn't give you to approve the feasibility study if you don't have a site clearance. So it's a very important part of it because of all the environmental impact assessment that's got quite an impact on it. So that covers the six. Obviously, then we have to get feedback from public works in terms of the final date now for the viability study of the UCO. That will have an impact on the UCO. And Philip 1 is the start issue.
Before we get to Mr. Morty, question, deal with Mr. Stoll's question. The alternative site for Polokwane and Yuko. I think the can I really, and also just to my Lord the Bishop, say no, you've been at pains to point out to us the availability of alternative sites, and I think the chairperson has given a very clear directive that I would really hope we have the Chief Operating Officer of Public Works here and our own people, because it's not, sometimes free gifts can also be quite expensive, because you know you need to look at the issue of proximity to services, infrastructure, water. It can be quite costly if it doesn't meet those criteria. But I'm not the expert. That's why we can't simply make decisions to accept a gift like that. You need to subject it to scrutiny by the Department of Public Works, in fact, and other experts. For us to register the need, for us to urgently resolve the issue of the site for Polokwane, and that if the offer that you are giving us for the site in Sekhukhune is not to be accepted, you must provide very clear reasons why it is not the case. I undertake that I will follow through on that through my office. But really just to say that we don't, we're really grateful for having made that offer, and the fact that there's been a follow through in the spirit of, I think, one of the members, that we have to begin to accept that we've been slow in not following through on some of these things as we should have. But to come to Mr. Self's issue, on the Leucop, yes, we've done some earthworks, as you've said. Leucop has really been a very complicated one, because the first problem we've encountered there was we had to subject the process to an environmental impact study. And the environmental impact study delayed us initially, and then placed further restrictions. When that was resolved, the issue of the earthworks, in order for it to be prepared for the in time for the feasibility study, that was done. So yes, we have spent money on earthworks at Newcom. The issue of now that we passed for the viability study, we realised that there may be a risk that we have to. That we have spent money, but I think we have to subject that to a cost-benefit analysis. You know, the cost of continuing to build on that site against the money that we've already spent on the earthwork, and in the long term, what will be in the best interest of the state. And clearly, when we do have that report, we should engage and come back to you and talk to you about it, because there will be an element potentially of wasteful expenditure if the viability study should advise us otherwise. So, yes, I would imagine the Nigel earthworks, we've completed that as well. Mr. Kalanda, the technical people. So I hope I've discovered you for now. If we can just ask Mr. Chaponda just to deal with some of the issues around value for money and the considerations in terms of the risk transfer, I think we need to debate that in a bit more detail. Chairperson, just to tell you, the other day I met with the High Commissioner of the United Kingdom, Mr. Paul Boateng. You may not know, he used to be Minister for Prisons in the UK, Her Majesty's Government. And I've had a discussion with him around the challenges of providing infrastructure. And he raised a very interesting thing with me. He said, you know, given the cost of what we pay these private entities, one of the things that we must be very clear about is that we transfer the risk, even in respect of rehabilitation outcomes. So after someone comes from one of these facilities, the level of recidivism cannot be measured the same as those who come through that of a government facility. And I was quite excited by that take on it, and I certainly would like to engage, but that is another. In fact, if we invest so much, surely we should expect what comes out of the other end should be considerably better. But that may be a debate on its own, and I'm saying it as a matter of interest.
Yeah, we must also do research on the results of the private prison versus here in South Africa versus our prison. Is it value for money? You see, because Commissioner, this committee have said after a visit of the two private prisons, will it not be better for the department to take juveniles into these two prisons, because it's well equipped, there's classrooms, there's workshops. But you see, Bishop Tolo is asking this type of thing, because we are raising things in the meeting. Bishop Tolo is talking about it now. That will be value for money. You can't put an old man of 70 years or 60 years in Mangaung, 70, 60 years, and teach him how candle making, teach him to read and write. But a boy of 16 years who must sit for life in prison, we can use that very thing to prison. It's very good prison, no doubt about it. But I think that the department is using it the wrong way. That is what we are saying, value for money. Put youngsters in there. And, I mean, there's doctors, full-time doctors there that we don't have in this other prison. This is Kootfly, Portsmouth, and whatever. The facility there is for youngsters, not for a person of 60, 70 years. But over to you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Chair. Just to Chair, to clarify, perhaps you misunderstood me. In the previous meeting where the feasibility study was presented, there were some indicative figures presented to the committee, and I was not trying to suggest that the committee should be kept in dark, but we are just invited by DCS to join them here, I would not have had the opportunity to make that kind of intervention. So I'm sure at the right time, the DCS would ensure that the committee is fully apprised of all the figures. That would be in the interest of everybody, including the Treasury. Thank you very much. What I would like to talk to Chair is just the question you asked, like, what really would be the benefit? You know what I mean? You said, what would really be the benefit of these PPP prison. So you'll allow me just to spend a bit of time on that, because I think it's important. But I also think it's also important that that I clarify quite strongly that, you know, these prisons, if procured as PPPs, is a DCS process. You know, we as the PPP unit of the National Treasury are really a support and an advisory a unit. And what we try to do is to ensure that all parties understand what is involved in the process and what are the benefits of the process. But at that point, the department concerned must make their own judgment in the light of day, given the facts and the information. So I don't stand here suggesting that these are our prisons. They're the prisons of DCS, and the DCS must make those decisions. But what I will try to clarify to all honourable members is what in fact are the benefits of procuring facilities through a PPP. Well, some of these issues have already been mentioned this morning, but I would like to just emphasize them. We heard that one thing was about on-time procurement. That is important because you have heard that in the instance of Kimberley, there has been some slippage in the time frame. In the PPP process, once the contract has been signed with the private party, there is no slippage in the timing. And just to perhaps maybe correct my colleague here, part of the negotiation does touch on the timing. So the private consortium will commit to DCS that the prison will be commissioned by such and such a date. That is part of the process. And we saw in the previous experience
of the two private prisons that they did deliver on time. So it would give certainty to everybody around this table that once that TPP contract has been signed, you should be able to say with a very, very high level of certainty that the facilities, the five new facilities, will be ready by this date. That is how the contracts are structured, and that is how the incentives are also built in. Secondly, on the budget, Chair, it is also important that we have seen in the JVCC contracts, such as, for example, Kimberley, that you would see these escalations. I'm saying in the conventional procurement, it doesn't have to be prisons, it can be office accommodation and so forth. Under the conventional procurement, you will see the escalation. Once again, in the PPP procurement, and I'm not just talking about prisons, in general, you will not have those escalations. Once the contract has been negotiated, which is a difficult negotiation, and the reason it is a difficult negotiation is because they enumerate what could be the sources of escalation, and they try to quantify those things, and they then lock in the numbers. So the numbers are then locked in. And then government is faced with some certainty around the budget because those escalations would not be faced in. So the prison or any building for that matter would be delivered on time and on budget. And we cannot overemphasize that point because the world over, not only in South Africa, might I emphasize, the world over we have seen that in conventional procurement there's time overrun and there are budget overruns. And the reason why there is the perception of a premium on the PPP procurement is because you are controlling for the overrun. And so in a sense, it is not a cost premium. You are rather locking in upfront to say, hey, we do not want to be surprised 6 months down the road to be sold from 600 million. We're now at 800 million. We want you to lock in that cost upfront right now. The other benefit, the third benefit I'd like to mention is around maintenance. Honorable members around the table have lamented the issues of maintenance, and again, it is in many departments, in many sectors, we see that maintenance programs are ad hoc. And there would be different reasons for that. It might be, in fact, is there budget there for maintenance and so forth and so on. But the main point I'd like to make here is that under the PPP contract, the maintenance is built into the contract and it is carried out on a consistent and a regular basis. It is part of the contract and the private party is held legally accountable for that and they will be penalized if the building is not maintained. So that at the end of the 25-year period, what reverts to government, and remember it reverts to government, is a pristine, well-maintained building. That is part. So the headache of maintenance is no longer a problem for the department because the private party is accountable for that. Then let's talk about point number four, the issue of affordability. If we were to assume eight facilities being built for plus minus 800 million as per Kimberley, you're talking 6 to 7 billion. Now, if you do that by conventional prison, then government must be ready to say, we are going to upfront put 6 to 7 billion on the budget. And I'm just saying it is a choice. It is a choice. And what the PPP allows you to do is to say, okay, let these fellas build it, and then we will finance this over a period. It's effectively saying, like, if I have a mortgage for my house, do I want to go and finance it with my bank over 20 years? Or in fact, do I want to take the money up front, be it 2 million, and pay it in that first year? And it is really, I'm saying, a choice that needs to be made. Clearly, if you are going to finance it over 20 years, there will be interest and finance costs you are bearing. And those are also explicit, and we can look at those up front. But it takes a bit of pressure off your budget because instead of putting 7 billion in the first 2 years, for instance, you are going to finance this thing over time. And that may make it, in a sense, more manageable for government in terms of cash flow. Then let me talk about, please, Chair, if you allow me, the output specs, because I made that, that was also mentioned. Well, the truth of the matter is if you go to the private prisons, the output specs are closely aligned to the white paper. And you can, the department, DCS can ensure that the new private prison would be aligned with the white paper and that the private party would be penalized if they do not deliver according to those output specs. So in terms of rehabilitation and other issues which are central to the white paper, you can build these things into the PPP contract and penalize the private party if they do not maintain them. Similarly, when it comes to the BEE targets, which we know are also important when you're talking about such large amounts, you can also build those targets. You can wire them into your contract, and if the private party does not live up to those, you would penalize them. As you would if there are any major incidents or escapes, once again, the private party would be penalized. So let me just end by saying that at the end of the day, it is a choice that government must make. And the way in which the process is structured, that was captured in the feasibility study, was to say if government were to procure and operate these facilities, what would be the cost net-net? And that was captured in the feasibility study as X, some big figure X. That is government procuring and running the facility. Then we say, if the private sector comes in, are we certain when all is considered that there would be a net benefit to government, that the private party would procure and operate the facilities cheaper than government? And what their feasibility study provided, that there would be a 22 to 23% net financial benefit. That is what they captured as the value for money of the private party coming in, managing all these various risks on behalf of government. And on that basis, on the basis of a 22 to 23% net benefit on a financial basis, DCS took the decision that was mentioned here. I hope that's clear. Thank you.
Thanks. Before I'm giving the member, the commissioner, can you, sir, tell us, you see, it's the two, the Mangaung one and the Limpopo one, plus five, it's seven. It's 300 million for one now. It will be 2.1 billion for the seven. Can you work out for 25 years how much will one cost? One. Say we are working it out on 300 million per annum for 25 years.
Chair, on this, I've always been a little concerned about rash statements made by the department about the negative aspects of these private partnerships agreements. And I've warned before, and I would say again, the department should be very careful about making such statements before doing full investigation. To be able to work that out and to be able to fairly compare, one also needs to do a proper financial investigation into the actual cost of running one of our prisons. And we never do. We never really sit down and say, what are the costs of these buildings? What is the cost of the maintenance? What is the cost of staffing this prison? You cannot just say, this divided by so many prisons gives you, you've actually got to sit and financially calculate the cost of an individual prison. And I don't believe the department has ever done such an exercise. And I honestly think that it's wrong to make the rash statements we've had in the past, the minister and some of our officials. And I really would appeal that when we start looking at feasibility and we do comparisons like that in future, we bring proper figures to the department, to the Correctional Services Portfolio Committee, so that we are in a position to really know our apples from our pears, because I think we are comparing apples with pears.
I know you're asking the question directly to him, but I'm wondering that it may be an unfair question to put. I think part of the answer is indeed in how we do that comparison, and what I think I accept that feedback, Mr. Seaton. What we're hoping with the Kimberley is that we will benchmark here Kimberley very firmly with some of our PPPs. I think we want to begin to operate on that basis in order for us to begin to have those comparatives. I'm trying to protect Treasury in some sense from some of the type of information, because clearly when throwing into the cost, we not only talk about the capital cost, but there are also the operational cost dimensions. Maybe that could be once we come back, deal with some of the details, do some of the Kimberley and the newer facilities, and begin to engage in that so that we can answer that question going forward. About the cost benefit and the value for money. And Chairperson, with that, there are also other elements of value for money that you raise, such as, for instance, the choices that you make in terms of who we put into these facilities. I think I wouldn't want to say as a counting officer we should remain open to that input from the committee. I don't think we should be married to the idea of taking people who, you know, at the end, the outcome on rehabilitation and reintegration would be more limited. So let me commit that we should engage on that issue also with Portfolio Committee going forward. But having said that, Chairperson, if you would allow me just to continue to run through and respond to some of to the questions of members for the first round. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be very brief, actually. And, Chair, if I can please just thank the Honourable Member for making that point, because it really comes to the heart of this debate, that it is only when you're comparing apples with apples that you can really answer the questions that are being asked. But let me just make a framework for how do we think about it as we go forward in engage. How should we think about it? Well, there are two elements, clearly, in terms of cost. There are two elements. One is the capital cost, actually building the thing and commissioning the facility. That is one element. Then the second element, obviously, is the operating and running costs going forward, including maintenance and so forth and so on. Now, if you look at those two elements and you say, capital costs, do we have any reason to believe that TPP procurement would deliver higher capital costs than the conventional procurement? And the answer is very, very clear. The TPP procurement delivers the world over, not only in South Africa, lower capital costs. That is very clear. For the same building, same output spec. Capital cost, that is an undisputed issue. Then you come to say, well, what about going forward in terms of the operating cost? Can we then say, now once again, you must then say, is our comparison like for like? In other words, let us strip out the capital element which is built into that so-called unitary payment. Because in the unitary payment of the PPP, there's partly that capital cost that I mentioned, like our mortgage, that element that we were paying over that. So you need to strip that out, right? Because the very benefit of putting it over time was so that you don't pay it up front. So you can't then now penalize the model for that aspect. So once you strip out that capital element, you then say, well, what is left? How does it compare? And once again, if I can point you to the feasibility study that was tabled, the transaction advisor, who is a third party, independent of government, they have applied their minds to this analysis, and their calculation suggests that the PPP prisons are not more expensive. They have put data in terms of rate per offender per day for Mangaung and for some estimate for DCS, also adjusting for overcrowding. And I'm saying their finding, not our finding as government, is that the operational costs for PPP prisons are not higher. So I agree with the Commissioner that we should continue to engage and question this issue. But the evidence before us suggests that both for the operating element and the operating cost, that at worst we are not penalizing government by going with the PPP approach.
But I'm just to say that, talking about going forward, in the end we should be able to ask when will government operate as effectively and efficiently as the private sector. And perhaps that is why this debate must continue.
You can't say that, Commissioner. Let me show you. 241 prisons. Two prisons are taking 600 million rand. And you can't expect... Nkosi Kolo is talking about toilets that is not working in one of the showers that is not working. You can't expect that with 600 million rand you don't get a proper service. You must get a proper service. And I'm sure that this year, of the new financial year, the cost will be higher. I've not had my answer. When we are saying 300 million, it's 2.1 billion for 1 year. We are going to, if we are going to go on to that model. For 25 years, how much will that be? They can't match with the government prison.
Chairperson, this is of serious concern, and this is why I say proper investigation's got to take place. At the end of 25 years, a private partnership prison will be handed over to the government and will be a perfect building because it's been maintained. Within 5 years, one of our prisons, new prisons, is already in a shocking condition because it's not maintained. And that is the difference. The difference is built into the private partnership agreement is a maintenance program that is going to deliver a perfect building at the end of the 25-year period.
We will disagree on that one, but we are going to disagree on that.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I am listening very attentively. and I'm just thinking, probably, I don't know, we have had two PPP presents. Were these processes not followed, that we could have learned from them and therefore able to make choices from the beginning? I mean, why? Because for me, I still feel that if the PPP is the best model, then we were misled by the department as a portfolio committee to suit the whatever argument at that time. I can't understand, because I want to believe that there must be information somewhere to say we chose this model at the time because of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 reasons. And therefore, this is the best model. Because we're talking about 2002. I came here in 2004. And ever since I started as a member of parliament here, we've been talking about this. And the department was not able to say up front, no, this is what we think is proper. Is it because maybe the first two, because I wasn't there, these processes were not followed? What happened? I'm sitting really thinking and listening and wanting to be convinced that there is nothing, particularly after the question of conflict of interest raised somewhere. I just don't know. And I'm sitting here not even being sure as to whether I'll come back as a member of parliament. I don't want to be associated with anything I'm not sure of. And that is why one would want to ask these questions. Because you now don't understand. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Yeah,
thanks, Chair. I'm going to follow towards the minister said that you have just heard of the department is telling us. I think it would be proper for us as the committee to meet as well and further the discussion around these PPPs, because even myself, I'm not clear what we're talking about.
The only thing, but we'll meet, I agree. The only thing, you see, the question that Mr. Mahote has asked
also a thing that we as a committee must discuss. If the department took that decision in building this triple T, we must decide as a committee, we must sit as a committee to, and I agree with what Cindy is saying. I don't personally don't want to be associated with a thing that I, that minister, I have said it over and over and over again. I don't want to be associated with a thing that I don't understand and I don't know. When we are asking this question, Commissioner and the panel, we want to understand and to defend a position. You see, when we are not no more in, you see, the two private prisons, those people who have decided on them are no more yet. And we are sitting, you as a department are sitting with that problem. Now, we don't want to be pointed a finger next time to say, you see that Bloom, that Cindy Chukwuka, that Tolu have put us in this. We want to understand and defend a position that we took. We are not negative. We want really to understand what is the thing of triple P. Because even the department, Mr. Linda Mchi, I'm having minutes of all our meetings. They themselves have said that, no, this thing is not working. I have quoted what the minister has said here. Now, all of a sudden, we, as this committee, must now accept this thing and say, yeah, no, it's fine. No, we can't. We must first be convinced about this triple P model.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. And I'm really grateful. I do think it's important for us to unpack and engage and to really debate this matter until we have answered all these questions. Because it is a huge commitment. So I really have respect for the position of the committee. And if it means we come back to answer further questions from a different angle, I'm quite committed to that. I think there are also other elements just in terms of the issue of costing that we shouldn't lose out of the debate. You will recall, and this is one thing Kimberley is going to provide a very good lesson for us. This committee must be aware that Kimberley is now going to be the first facility that we are going to operate where we're not providing official accommodation for staff. Now that in itself is a major cost driver. And of course, the question in most jurisdictions, we have seen official accommodation for staff no longer being the norm and being phased out. And that's also part of what's been pushing up the cost for these facilities being operated by government. In the case of the two PPPs, you will also recall there's no such dimension as private staffing accommodation. I don't think we should underestimate the extent to which that in itself contributes to the cost. And so, yes, Kimberley will give us some very interesting lessons, and there will be some phases that the committee should also be aware of. But I think in our desire to begin to develop models where we can begin to drive up the efficiency level and begin to compare, I think that is really exciting. But I just want us to run quickly through some of the other questions so that we don't ignore what members have asked. I think in addition to the other question or points raised by Bishop Tolo, Zanin just reports, we're building a new facility. I've heard that the contractor was going to be on site early this year. Mr. Fernandez, the concern raised about Zanin the last time, because I was there in December to visit Zanin, and when I was there, I told him, the heck, when are these people coming on site? Because we're building, in fact, we've been delayed slightly because we want to increase the initial bed space that we have approved for Zanin to double that. Are we on track there to respond to the
Commissioner? Yes, we're holding the public works project manager to report to us on following your inquiry on that. And what has happened, they received three tenders, of which the one tender was, two tenders were non-compliant, and the third tender was too high. according to the estimate, not value for money. So they went to the adjudication committee, and that was accepted that they had to retender because of that, because there was a huge difference in the estimate and the actual submission. So they're in the process of re-advertising that project to deal with this competitive bidding and ensuring value for money. So that was what we've received back from Public Works on this.
You see, now and then, Bishop Tolo is correct. You see, this thing of Zanin Prison, we are talking about this thing, now there's a new tender must come in and a new thing. We were told, myself and Bishop Tolo, that the contractor will start that time. We were even invited with the minister, with Bishop Tolo, to that place. Now you see why Bishop Tolo is asking this thing of taking the committee seriously. It's because of this thing. It is constituency. I was present one day when the head of the prison called him, and fortunately I was over his phone itself in my office, and he said to the head of the prison, I'm here with the chairperson, can you speak to him? And I was also speaking to the head of the prison to say, no, the minister have promised us that this project must. How must he, as a member of parliament, a representative of the people, say to people there, when this thing is not coming from the ground? I am saying, you see, we must be taken serious, Commissioner.
Chairperson, thank you. I wanted to say that I have the same anxiety around Zanin. But this is part of what the debate is about when we talk about procurement of facilities. It's by very nature, it's multi-year. There are uncertainties, there are delays, and these are some of the risks that we are talking about. I'm not making that as an apology. I'm saying I've got my eyes squarely on the ball of Zanin. Why are the delays? I followed up, and I will continue to do so, Chairperson. I think, Ms. Ngwenya asked the question that I think we've dealt with when responding to the LUCOP question on the status, but I wonder if I can ask Mr. Motseki or Mr. Van Andra just to cover some of the issues around the maintenance program and how we manage and plan maintenance and the backlog. So I think the question asked by Mr. Tolo as well as by Mr. Relates to the maintenance issues. I think we have to give you some overview around some of the issues. Mr. Mateki, do you want to give that to Mr. Fernando? If you can just talk about what the our approach and how we are beginning to deal with those backlogs.
Yes, in terms of the armor that was promulgated in last year, Public Works as the custodian of government properties looks after in terms of maintenance also. So what we do is we've allocated quite a substantial part of the budget to which we get from Treasury in terms of addressing planned maintenance. And the process is that we pay this upfront to Public Works for them to run the various programs and projects to maintain. Obviously, if you got a sense of the backlog, you cannot address all the maintenance. It's a fact. It's not something that you... So it's a process. We also researching quite extensively in terms of the prioritization process in terms of that. But the important thing is, I think what we're doing at the moment is we are funding, out of our funding, transferring it to Public Works, wherein they run with these programs. We have a system where we engage with them and where they report to us to ensure that their continuation of the important programs and that the important maintenance portions of the facilities are covered. for year on year. I suspect again these are not sufficient funds to cover all the maintenance. It's a general fact in government that we are trying to catch up and address the backlog to do by doing repair and maintenance. But I'm not sure if Public Works might want to elaborate on the implementation of the details.
Okay, Chairperson, thank you very much, and honorable members. I think it's important just to highlight on the question of which was raised by honorable in terms of government having a national infrastructure maintenance strategy. Yes, it is correct, government does have a national infrastructure maintenance strategy which was approved by cabinet. It deals with planned maintenance and unplanned maintenance. We have done a financial assessment in terms of the required funds to do and cover up the backlog for maintenance. It's amount to 5 billion in terms of the backlog only, not in terms of maintaining the existing deteriorating kind of infrastructure, which infrastructure. In consultation with departments like DCS, we do plan the nature of maintenance productivity that we'd like to do. And also do respond to certain maintenance requirements which are unplanned. So we do have that facility in place. That program you see in most government buildings referred to as REM, which is a repair maintenance program, which requires also continuous improvement from time to time because the changes do come with different challenges on a day-to-day basis. I think Chairperson, I must also respond to the question raised by Bishop Solo in terms of the Kukuni land. And I know that the Commissioner has put this in so much nice and softer ways, but the hard reality is that from our side, in terms of, I'm talking from the ground and from the operation point of view, we definitely need to do investment analysis and also do option analysis as to whether the question of Sikubuni land in terms of the nodal perspective is the most appropriate from a cost point of view or not, and make that decision. Although we would like to make that decision not only based on business considerations only, but also take other considerations. And we'll come and observe on your directive to interact with other members in terms of that one. I think it's very important, Chairperson, also to add, lastly, on a lighter note, that the one honourable member actually suggested that the committee should meet and engage on the deliberations of today. The harsh reality, and that is the harsh reality, is that there are advantages and disadvantages on a number of models. So you have to go back and evaluate the situation on the basis of the process of making the decision to say which one is the best model under the circumstances. There's no perfect model. And it is my considered view that to a great extent, what DCS might have done in terms of choosing the CCC might have been informed by certain considerations. And the committee must be appraised in terms of that, or vice versa. I'm talking from an operations point of view in terms of the situation on the ground, not necessarily in terms of the model, because it's not always that one model works better than the other, because the challenges that you find on the ground are totally different from the challenges that you can actually extrapolate on the paper. So it's important that when the committee meets, probably in camera to take consideration of factors concerning that right. Let's say we want to try the PPP model. You want to try that on all 5 prisons or not? Or how do you minimize our risk? Or what are the other considerations that you can actually do? Given all the lessons that the actually seen in the other two. And I appreciate the point which you raised in terms of the where you're coming from and in terms of the next coming care. So that you get associated with good work, and but we've got to be efficient and effective in terms of what we do. So that tomorrow we do not get recalled back to say what do you recall in terms of this decision. I think it must be fully informed. But whatever the committee would like to present after their meeting, I think we'll be able to can actually go further into the comprehensive issue and come to a proper decision. And from experience, represent all of members and colleagues, there is no private money. And that you must understand. But there's always a cost effective and better money to use for, given all the learning. Thank you.
A mouthful. Thank you very much for that, Bishop Dolo.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, you know, I know a commissioner is very, very hard work. Old man, and I know him. And my apologies, Chairperson. Okay, but I know him, I'm telling you. The man who likes his job, I'm telling you. I've been taking notes on for a long time. But, Chairperson, you know, the day when we were in the 747 about this problem of planning, you know, we are others and we can think. If you ask your question and somebody responds to you, and then, you know, we are just... if you respond to me, always that question of you respond to me, or to us, we look into. You know, I remember that the same day, the minister said, Reverend Dolly, don't worry. In Zanin, those people, they are very good. No one can escape. Then they can show you why the department don't want look after that place. Because the minister was there in the meeting, but responding to me, he said, no, Reverend Dolly, don't worry. Those people are very good. No one can escape. According to you, I was not satisfied. That it was not that before the department answered, the minister was answering me. I was not satisfied. But he would say those people are good. Which means I was thinking, are we said this department, the development of this province, they're going to look another province, not Limpopo. Very good people. It's completely wrong. Because if you can look at Johannesburg, and if you can look at Nelson all over, then people, the population in Limpopo, 6 million. And you get in, people who came from Limpopo, they're there on those prisons. If you say we build a big prison in Johannesburg, those people that came from Limpopo, if you say you extend Nelson whatever way, if you go to the population of that place, Limpopo is a big population. Now you can see, when they say the people that are so good, nobody can escape, they're showing you, that's why this thing of running is broken like a snake, you know. I'm telling you, it's a problem. I'm trying to say, Chairperson, when our leadership were asking questions, when they're responding us, they must know. At the same time, in the classroom, we are telling the people, see those countries, is where sometimes you find we face a problem. But, Chairperson, the commissioner, I know him, and he will try to see and try to solve this kind of a problem. This thing of the Kukuni land, well, Chairperson, the commissioner, he was talking about, he was touching on the water and all those things, you see, if I'm not mistaken. If you can ask the Mrs. Andrews, the Minister of
Bishop, you are now coming into the secrets and the details of your meeting between them. They have said that you must meet and discuss all those things. You will show them the water, the big dam there. You will show them the big dam there.
Honorable Chair, no, there are, I think you've confirmed the progress around Port Jefferson and the efforts to upgrade following your discussion with the Regional Commission in SECO. But if you have further detail that any of my colleagues want to expand on, if you're covered by that. Chair Jackson, I hope we've covered the question so far. I know that there's always space for more detail. and I'm also quite aware that sometimes one can also get lost in the details. This is why you need people like Mr. Malebe who can just come and zoom in to what the choices and the decisions are that we have to make. But for now, I think, Chairperson, I'll leave it at that.
I hear what you are saying about the payment and all that. But it went in there. 300 million for this. But it's a problem. You see, private prison, it's a business. It's not a thing of delivering a service to government. It's a business. 300. And I'm talking about this cost. Yeah, this financially. 301. For the one. We are 602 million. I'm saying, let us, you see, I'm happy that Mr. Malebe has given this guy, and I'm very much happy with that. Now, you must be us, so that when we sit, you must be convinced that no, 300 million in 25 years. And I'm talking about the present situation. When we go over 25 years, how much will one student?
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. Again, I go back to the feasibility study, and I do so because that was done by a third party. And it's not our figure. So that's why I continually go back to that, because that was scrutinized and done by somebody else who's held accountable, and they were doing that work for DCS. And it is important to... I hear the lump sum figures you're talking about. I hear what you're talking about. But it is always important to come back to the rate per offender per day, because that's what you can compare. That is the only way you can really compare that. And if you look at the feasibility study, please bear with me, Chair. The cost they present there, they say, well, let's take Mangaun prison specifically. What is the operating element? Remember, I distinguished between the operating cost and the capital cost. The operating element for Mangaun is 148 rand per offender per day. When they compare that with DCS current budget, again on a rate per offender per day, they come out with a figure of, I'm looking at their report here, they come out with a figure of 191. And then when they adjust it for the fact that there's overcrowding, they come out with 152 rand. So I'm saying what their study suggests is that Mangaun, when compared with DCS averages, is essentially the same operating cost per offender per day. That is their figure. Now, the reason that on face value, it would appear that the two private prisons on the ground cost more, right, per month or so forth, is because government includes in that payment today the capital cost. Whereas in the DCS prison, if you look at their current budget now, the capital cost was paid by government up front. Right? So, if I can suggest, Chair, we have recently produced a very short booklet on PPP, because we realize that really it is quite complex to understand how these PPPs work in relation to government facilities. And that's true in any sector. So we've come out with that publication towards the end of the last year. I can get, and it's also written in very user-friendly language and not
these funny sort of things, I can suggest that I could deliver a full set of those booklets to your office tomorrow. I've asked those to come through, and it takes you through in a very systematic way. What are PPPs? Why do people use them? And what is the process? So I'll have those delivered to your office tomorrow. And if you like, you can invite us to engage with you specifically on PPPs. But what my colleague from Public Works said here is that there are different models, and no model is perfect. I would take that fully on board. But he also said that at the end of the day, some models are more cost-effective than others. Now, what the feasibility study told us, right, is that for the same output, and that's really the heart of the matter, for the same prison, i.e., you want this prison, and it must look exactly like this prison, and the service must be exactly the same, for the exact same output, that the PPP procurement is more cost-effective. That is what they said, right? Now, the reason that the comparison is always flawed is you cannot compare Mangaung, right, to the one which is down the road. You cannot, because they are not providing the same output. If you go to the private sector, on the other hand, and say, look, Mr. Private Sector, we want you to provide a facility for this cost X, right? Because that is what we have in our budget. They will say, fine, but what is the level of output do you want? Do you want 70 inmates per toilet? Is that what you want? Do you want overcrowding at 139%? Do you want, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Then if you as government agree to those lower outputs, right, much lower outputs and outcomes, they will give you that at that cost that you want. But if you go to them and say in your tender document, we want you to give us this output and this output according to the white paper, then that is what you're going to pay. So at the end of the day, what level of output does government want to see in its prison? If it wants to see 70 inmates per toilet, no maintenance or ad hoc maintenance, that will give a different cost implication. On the other hand, if you want the level of output that we have specified in the white paper, that gives you something else. But the PPP prisons, according to the transaction advisor, are cost effective for the same output.
Yeah, just to add to that, because the other question is that what was not done for the current two PPP prisons, and what has been done for these 5-1? For the current two, there was no feasibility. There was no regulatory framework of how the feasibility could be done. There was no PKM, there was no PPP unit in Treasure. So that is the difference, that there was no feasibility study. What was done was a post, you know, there was a complaint, there was an outcry that is existing even now, even though that was 2006. That there was the same outcry in 2001, 2002. So as National Treasury and Public Works and Correctional Services, we did a post-sale business study. We had a professional advisor to do an investigation. And there were upsides. Like, for example, the output certification which came from the Correctional Services was one of the reasons why these buildings became expensive. I mean, if you want this, the wall to be as thick as this size, it will be more expensive than the wall as less thicker. If you want prisoners to be out for 12 hours of the day, it will be more expensive than prisoners being out for 4 hours a day. If you want that level of education, health, etc., that the professor mentioned, it means more, you know, it costs more. But as of that study that was done and was presented to this committee on the 18th of 2002, no, I noticed that myself and the chairperson are the oldest members of this committee. So it was presented as of 2002.
And I think what we will do, because the remarks that were made in 2006, I was surprised as well. When I asked, based on what reported, that the remarks that you are making. So they have been turned over in both the committee and the department, but luckily two of us are still there standing. So what we are going to do, as Heather, we are going to work together with your researcher and brief him and provide him with all the documentation. Because now that we have appointed your researcher, all these arguments that were made should be made by us, made by your researcher. So for us is to empower the department and the researcher to be able to answer all the questions that you are raising. So I'm very glad that you have got the researcher and trying to take you back regarding the current proposals. Then you'll understand. So that now, going forward, there will be more clarity. Thank you, Jeff.
Sorry, sir, will you just give me one more minute? Is this issue of the appropriate level of output, and we are working closely with DCF to say, let's make sure that we get the right level of output. And there are the technical assistant unit in the Treasury which is providing some support. Because if we make sure we've got the right level of output, then what is spent will also be appropriate. Now, let's be specific so that I illustrate this quite graphically. If you go to Louis Trichard PPP prison, I learned, to my surprise, that the output that government had given to the private sector, I'm talking 5, 6, 7 years ago, was to have a vehicle that patrols the perimeter of the entire facility 24 hours a day, going round and round and round, in spite of having three, barbed wire fences. But can you believe it? There's a vehicle that goes around 24 hours a day. Guess what? We're paying for that. But those are the lessons we have learned, you see? So we will make sure that if we have any more new PPP prisons, we will not have an unreasonable output, such as a vehicle going around 24 hours a day. So if you took that vehicle away, right, then you'd be paying less. So I believe that if we have the right, and now I'm speaking as myself now, I believe that if we really spend the time to make sure that we take best practices and that the output specs are appropriate, that we're not putting outputs in there which are unreasonable and unnecessarily burden the cost, that would end up with costs which are at worst, similar to what government would incur in any event. And at best, there would be a cost saving, as the feasibility study suggests. You see? But if we're talking about time to the ground, in other words, we want prison to be on the ground in the next 2 to 3 years, then, again, speaking personally, I would appeal to the committee to say, let us allow the RFQ and RFP process to proceed. Let us be vigilant that the process is well run, is well managed, and that the output specifications are appropriate. Then we will see our prisons on the ground in a timely fashion. And in the process, let us continue to engage. Thank you.
No, I wouldn't agree with you. We are going to sit as this committee to discuss this whole thing. But your last statement, we are not, for now, not going to agree with that one. I have said, and Mr. Malebe have captured it very nicely, that we are public representatives, and I don't want to personally, and don't want a finger to be pointed at me after a year or 2 years or 3 years. I want to be sure what I support is correct. I think that maybe I must ask, which other departments are using the triple T in government?
Thank you for that question, Chair. And excuse me if I overstepped just now. But in terms of the PPPs, we've had this framework regulated under the PFMA since 1999. And it is captured under Treasury Regulation 16 of the PFMA. And as such, we have now got 18 TPPs that are operational on the ground. That's 18, including the two prisons that you know very well. And these cover projects in the area of office accommodation, for example. So there are a number of office accommodation buildings. Just to give you an example, you've got Department of Trade and Industry, their head office is the PPP, DTR, Department of Education, and a number of others. So it's office accommodation, but also in the area of transport. Of course, everybody here would be very familiar with the Caltrain. That is also a PPP. But also in the area of ecotourism, we've got some PPP projects. And also in the area of health, we've also got some PPPs. Obviously, again, I'm sure everybody here would be familiar with Nkosi Albert Ituli Hospital, Universitas and Kelonomi. Most recently in December, there was the renal dialysis unit opened in Polokwane Hospital, also a PPP. So there are 18 of them on the ground and a number more in the pipeline. And at the end of the day, you know, the departments come to us as the PPP unit and say, can we explore this thing? But before it goes ahead, the one thing that is enshrined in Treasury Regulation 16 is that you must first do a feasibility study that pressure tests the different options and the different tests. And once you have convinced yourself that you have done the analysis by a third party who is independent, and you really examine those costs relative to other options, then the accounting officer must decide which option to take. But this booklet that I mentioned, which I'll deliver tomorrow, captures these issues and also gives you the projects which are on the ground.
The Department of Education, is there any project of a school that was built through Triple P?
A very sharp question, Chair. I've mentioned that they have recently closed, just last year, their head office accommodation. When it came to the school, again, they went through the feasibility study, as I said. They went through the feasibility study, and having explored the different options, the issue came of affordability. In other words, because you see, in that presentation, there are three tests which were shown in that when you do the PPP, three tests that must be met. One is value for money, we've talked about that. The second test is a risk transfer, that are you sure that the private sector is taking on the risk that they're better at managing, right? And then the third one is one of affordability, i.e., given what government is spending and what it intends to spend, would this PPP be within that envelope, an affordability issue? And the feasibility study was done in the Free State for schools, and the department looked at these three tests and felt that they could not convince themselves on the basis of those three tests. So that project has not gone ahead. So the short answer, Chair, is that no, we do not yet have a PPP school project on the ground.
So successful and so cost effective. There's a problem of schools in the country. Why is the Department of Education not going on to that one? And we, you see, correctional service is not a business. We are going to put this money in. And the same with education. And I think that education, we're sitting down and saying that, and I'm sure maybe Commissioner will help me, what is the budget of education compared to the budget of correctional services?
Just in the 21% of the GDP, that's not a way I can answer
it. Yeah. Your budget and Department of Correctional Services. What is the budget of staff? The police? Bigger than the Department of Correctional Services. They don't have one triple C.
Chair, Honorable Chair, Firstly, it was talking about the budget in that particular province, as opposed to it was a provincial budget. But the power of the feasibility study is you do not generalize. You go into the specifics of the project that is being proposed. In that particular project, the schools were quite scattered around, and they were quite dispersed. I forget they were talking about 24 secondary schools, but some FET colleges and so forth, and there were wide distances between those. So what that feasibility study looked, it said, will it be cost effective to procure in this manner, given the specifics of this project? Now, if in fact you have a capital asset, which is large capital asset, and where the elements of that asset are not dispersed far away, in other words, for example, like an office accommodation building, because that is one big capital asset, or in fact, like a prison, then the characteristics of that project are more amenable to this big procurement. You've talked about, for instance, safety and security. They have registered with us their head office accommodation. Again, given the characteristics of that particular project, and they are now pressure testing it in the feasibility study. After that feasibility study, and what emerges in terms of the cost effectiveness, they may or may not decide to go with the PPP. But we can at least be confident that the current process on the five prisons has been subjected to a rigorous feasibility study, and that there were clear recommendations that came out of that. We do have that. We do have that report and what it recommended in terms of cost effectiveness. Thank you.
Chairperson, yes, indeed, a very, very vibrant debate. I don't think, and I agree with you, we can say we've reached the point and we've dealt with it. This is an ongoing discussion that we must have. And I've tried to locate it within the context of the tremendous backlogs that we have to deal with, and given the fact that our own facilities, even where they exist, do not meet the minimum standards for decency, never mind the outcomes of rehabilitation. So the challenges are huge. And in doing so, to also accept that we need various kinds of approaches to begin to address some of these challenges. In the long run, We need to make sure that we can confidently say that even DCS and Portfolio Committee, that we've appraised ourselves of the facts sufficiently to know that we can commit ourselves to this. And I really appreciate the commitment made by the PPP unit of Treasury to assist us to supply additional information and any information that this committee needs in appraising itself of those facts to the researcher, and my office will certainly follow up on that. Chairperson, I think the fact is that within South Africa, as we have to deal with all these backlogs, and as I've said, the issue of choices that we have to make as a government as to where we have to put our limited resources, it's quite clear that these are difficult decisions, and therefore if I have to make a decision about the building of new correctional centers, it is not my call. I have to make that call in consideration of those pressures of government and what Treasury is able to do. And I reiterate to you that if it was my choice, I will build correctional facilities. If I could build it on time, in the cost, satisfy them with all that criteria. And that's the bottom line. I hope that we will move in order to begin to deliver on this need for new correctional centers within the shortest possible time. And I do hope that the committee will help me to achieve that imperative, to get correctional centers built within the shortest possible time, given the delays that we've already had. But thank you very much for the opportunity, Chair. I'm always willing to engage both outside and to come back into a closed session. Some of the detail that you may want to have, some of the possible ways in which we can structure the develop the specifications and guidance that this committee would give us as we continue on this route. I'm quite willing to do so. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Let me first thank Treasury, Department of Public Works, for the input that you have made. Very, very good input. And I'm sure that some of us will take this when we are sitting as a committee to discuss this thing thoroughly. Commissioner, thank you very much. Mzeki was very quiet today. I don't know if he speak or what, but we will take him to the... You are excited. You see, Cindy Chukunga has said there's nothing to be excited. But I'm happy that you are quiet, because this meeting could have taken until 3 o'clock if you were on the floor. But Commissioner and everybody present, I don't think that we are building this prison to address the problem of overcrowding in our prison. We are talking about 5 prisons, it's 15,000. It's 3,000 per unit. It's 15,000. That is not what we, as the portfolio committee, will want to do. To build prisons to address the problem of overcrowding. But rather, to address the problem of rehabilitation in our society. People are going to prison, come out more than before. They are worse criminals than before. We are saying, let's build prison to rehabilitate. You know, if we take this awaiting trial out of prison, we don't sit with an overcrowding situation in our prison. When we take the 46,000 out of there. When we take out this petty offender out of our system, a year, 6 months, 3 months, and what? Out. We are concentrating, and that is what government thinks and what we are thinking. It's really to address the issue of reoffending. Let us rehabilitate these people inside prison. We are going to make a very serious mistake if we think that we are building prison and we will build and build more prisons to address the issue of overcrowding in prison. Rather than saying, let us have very good structure for rehabilitation like the Bloemfontein one, like the Limpopo one. That people must, when they go in, when they have offended, they are sentenced, but then they are going in there, when they come out, they will be better citizens. We must never make that mistake. And that is not what this committee thinks that we must do, to build prisons only to address the issue. I am saying, the overcrowding situation, I can tell you, if we take all those, and you know that, Commissioner, if we take all the awaiting trials out, and all those people with petty offenses, we don't sit with a problem of overcrowding. But we are sitting with a problem of reoffending, rehabilitation. The Office of the Inspecting Judge, in its annual report, were saying 11% of program rehabilitation is taking place. And you, the Department of Correctional Services can't be blamed for that. It's because of this overcrowding situation. There's no classroom. There is no social worker. There is no facilities.
I am saying let us address the rehabilitation. And if we are on one understanding, yes. The last point that I want to make, we want this prison, commissioner, public works, treasure, but we will never ever agree on a model that we are not going to, that we are not understanding. Makabate has said, Malebe has said we must go. There's no perfect model. And that's very important to me. We are going to sit, and if we are saying, yeah, no, we have discussed it, and we find out that triple P is best, or the other one, or the other, we will come back and say. But let us also apply our mind to decide. And very soon, we will decide. I'm going to ask the member to have a very urgent meeting so that we must discuss this thing once and for all and take a decision on this thing. If we say no, it's no. If we say yes, it's yes. But we want this prison. We want it, but not at the expense of us as the committee. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you very much to the members. You have participated. Mr. Kipido was very silent today and very quiet today. I don't know if Mr. Kibido is intimidated by Mr. Mzehi here, but he's fine. Members, and I'm inviting you for lunch. There is something to eat here and drink. Don't think that we don't have a budget. We are still having something very small, but it's fine. We can still offer you some lunch. Thank you very much, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Thank you.